Tom and I've been at it now for 2.5 hours. Now we got another hour. I always say that the show, the stuff that's not on the air counts.
Yeah, well, so I see you.
That's us going around and around.
It's a 5-hour show then.
That it feels like anyway. People always say, how do you stand that guy? I heard that on Saturday. I was like, I love Tom. I spend more time with Tom than any other human being in the world. It's true. Like more than our well, partners, spouses, more than our wives, yeah. more than anybody. Kids.
It's true.
Since after a while, it's just like you're stuck with the guy. Right. Like on some sort of weird, you know, chain gang.
It's your left arm or your right arm. Do you resent your right arm?
You can't. Kitty Tiny Lady of the Pickle Jar, she's coming by now in the wagon. And Chris Sullivan said he wouldn't say anything. He's just going to hold on to her.
Oh,
and she's going to pick the letter of the day. She's going to have to get a chance to sit right back there behind Chris Martin's head and pick the letter of the day. So that's the plan.
All right.
Quiet on the wagon. We're playing Van Halen off. I couldn't find a song for Tom, man.
This is fine.
Is this all right?
I love this song. Yeah, of course.
Of course he does.
Connecticut guy.
Yeah.
All right, so here's what happens in radio. You have, you got three names normally in all shows. And the guy who's like the last person named in the list.
Yeah.
You know, like Bob, Frank, and Steve.
Yeah.
Steve's kind of the third wheel.
Last one hired, first one fired.
Right. But occasionally, you got to take that wheel that's in the back, you know, that's the spare. And you got to take the other wheel off. Keep the music under this. It would really help this. take the other wheel off and you put the spare on. And then all of a sudden, hey, go, well, the car is running. Is that pretty good?
That's a very fair description. I mean, sometimes those other two, what are you talking about, wheels or what are you talking about?
I don't know.
those other parts are too old. You say, you know what, let's just keep what we got here. We'll build around that.
I got it. So now it is Tom, Jake, and Stacy, and it's Jake Heaps, right?
That's right.
Okay. And Stacy, who's been doing all sorts of great stuff as a writer, she moves out of that position. You could hear her often. She would be on with G. Scott. She has a really interesting perspective of sports. So now it's all three of you are now doing the noon show.
We are indeed. Okay.
And right. Importantly, it used to be Bob Gross and Tom, the third wheel. Now the third wheel is the first wheel driving his own show, Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
So we wanted to talk to you, Tom. First of all, welcome you to our show and get your reaction to the Seahawks because Tom has an interesting take. And you want to give him your take first, Tom, and then he can bounce off of this?
It's not that interesting, but I finally, yesterday was the first, yes.
You spend a lot of time with someone, you sort of lose perspective of what's interesting and not interesting, okay?
Still, okay. I realized when we were down 20-6 to a team that we should be beating that I just need to relax that this is the way Russell Wilson and Coach Carroll and everybody else, they just designed the team to play lousy, to play close games, and to always come through in the end, which is exactly what happened. I realized yesterday, to me, was a carbon copy of what makes the Seahawks successful, but also what makes them absolutely frustrating as a fan.
Yeah, I think, look, Pete Carroll, and I'm on board with this, Pete Carroll wants this team to overcome adversity, mistakes. They want that type of game to be played, and they want the team to have faith in their game plan because then it justifies them sticking to the run and waiting until the end of the game to use Russell's legs. It's like, hey, we're 5-1. This is how we win. But you can't tell me for 1 second, and this is just sort of occurring to me right now, you can't tell me that Pete looks at those early mistakes and says, yeah,
good.
That's what
all
we're
right,
looking
good.
For out
Let's
there.
Get in a hole here.
Exactly.
Deep in a hole.
At the end of the day, if you're winning all your games that way, then you can sort of rationalize it and be like, hey, yeah, that's just the way we win. But it's tough. I can understand fans' frustration when, you know, you're down 20-6. Look, you're on the road. That's a pretty decent team.
Yeah.
They got talent all over the place. So if they had lost, it wouldn't have been all that big of a deal.
Uh-huh.
But when you make that many mistakes early, it's like, all right, how many more are we going to make before we stop? and we actually look like
playing
a regular football team.
Yeah.
But they did. I mean, like, right after that first quarter, they turned Baker Mayfield, like, every play that he was making before into one of their mistakes.
Yes.
So,
and then can you explain the philosophy or the psychology of football in that supposedly, and again, we always hear this secondhand, that after we gave up 20 points, boom, 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 the first three times down the field, Cleveland, that Bobby Wagner calls everybody together and says, okay, guys, now let's get our head in the game. Does that really work for a bunch of adults who've been playing this game for years?
You know what? They're not. Most of them aren't adults. What do you consider an adult?
Well, I would think 21, but yeah, you're right.
You're like 50-year-olds.
I would say, no, you're right. You're right. Sometimes when we criticize, I'm always amazed. when we read things that athletes say and we treat them like they're these, you know, sage old they're like they're in their 20s. What were you like when you were in your 20s? Yeah. Sometimes you forget things. Sometimes you need to be reminded, like, hey, we're on the road. This is a tough game. Get your you-know-what together. Do your job. We're going to be okay. We're talented. That's what these guys need.
Yeah.
And so credit Bobby Wagner for doing that.
Apparently so.
And did it do enough? I had heard, I was listening just to bits and pieces of it, so I heard Steve Vrabel say, and Wagner gets him over to the side, and he's probably also saying at this point, hey, guys, I'm not doing the best I can either. Let's all, you know, as you get your stuff together.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then, did it turn around at that point?
Yeah, I mean, they shut him down. They got
from
one,
that point on, I don't think they allowed another
touchdown.
Yeah, and that was much, much later in the game.
Okay, so according to Tom's theory, then Pete would say, hey, Bobby, hold off on the motivating speeches until later.
They're not going to buy into it until we're at least two touchdowns behind.
All right, so let's look forward to the Seahawks. Who do we have coming up that this type of we suck for the first three quarters technique will not work on?
The Ravens are next, I believe, and then the Falcons, and then somebody else, and then the 49ers. It's kind of tough that the next division opponent is so far away.
Yeah.
Because I think right now everybody wants to know, all right, well, how do the 49ers, who look real good right now,
stack
up with the Seahawks?
Mm-hmm. They're undefeated. They, like us, beat L.A., but they beat L.A. a little more convincingly than we did.
Yeah, they look like they're out of sorts, and Gurley didn't play, so, you know, I'm not really sure. The next couple opponents for the Seahawks should not be as tough as they've experienced so far. I mean, home against the Ravens, but then at the Falcons, like, the Falcons are a mess.
Yeah.
But going on the road, you never know. That offense can probably put up 35 points in their sleep. So, you know, I'd say 2-1 over the next three games would be a great outcome.
Okay. So how about Tom's final thought is he's not going to get nervous. He's just going to watch the games and just say, this is the way they play.
No, why not get nervous?
Because I'm also a Husky fan, and I tell you, the wear and tear on my psyche is too hard. The Huskies look absolutely horrible. We look like the Seahawks.
We're not.
Yeah,
not
Husky, talk.
Husky talk.
Yeah. He's got to cover both. They have Washington Wednesdays over
talk.
There.
Okay.
I
live and die with the Huskies, so by the time I get around to the Seahawks, I don't want to have to go through that again.
I like your attitude. Why not get nervous, right?
Why not? I mean, that's the fun of watching these games, isn't it?
You got to get invested.
Who wants to sit there with their arms folded the whole time just going, I mean, that's part of the enjoyment.
That Super Bowl we beat the Denver Broncos by, I love that. I was basically sitting back going,
That wasn't a game, Tom. Game.
I know. I loved it.
No, Tom's right. If you're not going to get involved, right? Also, if you're not going to get involved, then why even bother watching?
Yeah. Exactly.
Those are the party poopers, like at a bar or something. Who's winning? Who cares? It's like, who cares? Why don't you leave? Okay, because you obviously have a good place
me,
in the bar.
I'm not like that.
No, I know. But there are those people. And then they do this. Why do you guys care so much? I mean, like, who really cares?
What a waste.
It's just as a waste.
How incredibly boring.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Played this song in their car a couple times.
It is best.
We've got the dashboard organ going. He's got the snares right next to the steering wheel. Thanks, Tom. Tom, Jake, and Stacy, 710 ESPN. Good day. I'm on. Rooney. So fun to have somebody tell us it's okay to be nervous.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting. I thought that was always your thing.
It is, but it's so frustrating. It is true, though. If every game was boring, I probably wouldn't be as I just live on the edge of my seat the entire time, and so it gets wearing.
All righty. Let's see. It is a cure for some. There's one guy they said was having as many as, 20 drinks a day he was consuming, and then they decided, we're going to put you on this drug. You're going to try this. It's basically LSD. We're going to get you on LSD. Now, realize it could be life-changing in an altering way that makes your life amazing. You could have an incredible, 6-7 hour trip, or things could go horrible for you.
But the thing is, this is with medical supervision. This is at Johns Hopkins, one of the greatest hospitals in the world. And what they do is they put you through a lot of counseling beforehand. Then you go on this 6-7 hour trip where you are observed, and then you come out of it and you have counseling coming out of it. And it's worked wonders for people trying to give up smoking, try to get over depression, things that have been lifelong habits. Addiction and anxiety can be put to rest based on this story from 60 Minutes.
Or you could have a horrible time.
We tell people that
their experiences may vary from very positive to, you know, transcendent and lovely to literally hell realm experiences. Hell realm, as frightening an experience as you have ever had in your life.
Hell realm. But as you say, after you get through it, if it's a hell realm one, then you still are better.
However you get through it, the point is everyone seems to be better off. And by everyone, they say like 80% success rate with people that have had no luck with any other efforts to get them over their addictions or their anxiety. 80% success rate. It's incredible.
This is your scientist, Roland Griffin, again.
They come to a profound shift of worldview, essentially a shift in sense of self.
They see their life in a different way.
Their worldview changes, and they are less identified with that self narrative. People might use the term ego, and that creates this sense of freedom.
This regular acid?
What do you have?
What did I
regular?
Miss? Right? Smart. You look like you've dropped a couple tabs in your life. Let me ask you something. Did it life altering? Did you saw yourself in a totally different view? And if so, why'd you see yourself sitting here at 6 a.m?
I haven't tried full blown acid. I've done mushrooms and things like that, and I've had some hellish freakouts, and that's why I stopped. But I didn't.
Right?
It didn't help. I had no wisdom into life.
Well, except that you stopped. That I think is the wisdom. I'm not going through that again. In fact, they ask these people because they say it was life altering. Just would you want to do it again? Just hell no, I don't want to get near that stuff.
Once, so then you would drink the thing or eat it, and then you go through a horrible trip, and then come out the other side, and you're better because of it.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And they didn't allow 60 minutes to film anybody while they were high, but when they came out of it, then they could talk to them. It reminds me a bit of Clockwork Orange, that the great movie, the Anthony Burgess novel, but that is just more sort of like, okay, you've just been trained to link, you know, violence with classical music, and that stops you, but you can't listen to Beethoven anymore.
The third clip in there is pretty interesting. That's the guy that has the huge
drinking problem.
Okay.
Beer, usually cocktails, usually vodka sodas, tequila sodas, scotch and sodas.
John Costakopoulos was drinking a staggering 20 cocktails a night and had been warned he was slowly killing himself when he decided to enroll in another psilocybin trial at New York University. During one psilocybin session, he was flooded with powerful feelings and images from his past.
Stuff would come up that I haven't thought of since they happened.
So old memories that you hadn't even remembered came back to you?
I felt, you know, a lot of shame and embarrassment throughout one of the sessions about my drinking and how bad I felt for my parents to put up with all this.
He took psilocybin in 2016. He says he hasn't had a drink since.
Do you ever have a day where you wake up and you're like, man, I wish I could have a vodka right now or a beer?
Never.
Not at all.
Not at all. Which is the craziest thing because that was my favorite thing to do.
Ah, see?
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know when they say it's changed your worldview, but yeah, it certainly it gets you to stop the behavior they'd be trying to get over.
Well, a lot of this research was being done in the 50s and 60s, and the federal government came in and stopped it all.
Richard Nixon
stopped it because they didn't like the whole, you know, tune in, drop out. They didn't like the whole hippie part of it.
Yeah.
But they said the scientists were fighting for it. Says, you don't understand. We've got people coming back from the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. We have alcoholics. We have people that are clinically depressed and have been for years,
PTSD.
And nothing's worked on them.
Yeah.
This is working. Please don't stop this. But the federal government came in because... made up a whole bunch of crap. Part of it was they said, well, the CIA is also using this stuff, and they didn't want it to get into, you know, Abby Hoffman. They didn't want the sort of underground to also get these drugs because they thought somehow you could begin to alter people's positions and thinking and create, I don't know, a society that is not under the control of the government. What's their concern?
That was a reaction to an overreaction earlier, which was that the people in the military were giving it unto unsuspecting recruits.
Yeah,
that soldiers, they didn't tell people that they were giving them these drugs, and so that was an abuse of the government using them.
Yes,
and then he decided this is too potent stuff. We don't want it to get out into the hands of the regular populace. We already have a drug problem enough. They had no idea how bad the drug problem was going to get.
So then they stopped it all.
So they stopped. So that's why we have no research done. It wasn't until, like, you know, the last 20 years, I think somebody actually finally got FDA approval to even study the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they say they have no will. About one third of the people that go on this big experiment have bad, what they describe as bad trips. But they say we have no way of predicting. They do all these interviews with people to make sure they're psychologically prepped for it, but they don't know who's going to go on a good trip and who's going to go on a bad trip yet.
Would you ever try it? Come on, at your age, what do you care?
No, I know. I think I would only do it under these kinds of circumstances. You know, with John, like all, you know, the entire Johns Hopkins Hospital standing by there. To
do what for you? The problem is there's no help.
Yeah, well,
I don't think they can give you a drug to take you out of it. I think once the trip starts.
Oh, yeah, you're in, no. I'd have to sort of, I ask myself, why do I need it? I don't, but I do think it would be a great experience to have, you know, gotten through, I guess, talk about.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, 2 out of 3 shots, it'd be a great trip. How about you?
Is it a 66% chance that it works
out? Yeah, well, they say that one third of them have bad trips. And I don't know if that means one third have Nirvana trips and then the rest, you know, the middle swath are just kind of, it's just sort of random. But yeah, I think I might. You're right. At my age, what do I got to lose? Maybe we could do it on air, John.
I'm going to do that ayahuasca.
Called? That's that sweat thing.
No, it's not a sweat thing. It's a vomiting and pooping thing.
I'd rather sweat in retrospect.
I'm sure there's some sweating involved. No, you get in a great big circle and you drink this drink from the Amazon or whatever, and then you do a 4 hour, and you're guided. You got like a guy who has mostly organic clothing on.
No.
And makes his own shoes out of old tires. He's got those things on, and he's guiding you through it with like bells and candles and things.
See, you can tell how repressed I am. I'd rather have a guy in a lab coat do it. I trust Johns Hopkins more than
some guy with a noun like
in a teepee.
Got a noun for a name. Okay.
All right. I am rock.
Yes. My therapist is the one that's trying to get me to do this.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know why you would do it. You're willing to give up an arm and a leg for a good story.
No.
One or the other.
No, I always say that I would give up an arm to a shark rather than a thumb to a firework. And you're always like, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. And what justifies everything in John's life is you get a better story out of it. Well, pooping and vomiting. That's got to be a story. At least one segment on the Tom and Curly Show.
It's got to be the 8-minute segment, the long one down near the bottom. All right.
Right.
I'll take it for you, Tom. Great. Come right back. More Van Halen for everybody. Enjoy. For everyone. We can push with all our might.
But nothing's going to come. Yeah. I learned to play this song on the guitar. Unfortunately, nobody wants me to. Really got me going. Thanks, Van Halen. By the way, we got a listener who wrote, said that he would teach me all the Nickelback songs.
That's right.
Via Skype, so I have to get in touch with Andrew.
Yeah,
and,
that'd be great.
Andy, I think his name is Andy. Take care of that. By the way, hey, Lake Washington Windows and Doors, reminding you that your windows and doors, especially your windows, replace those windows. If you notice around the outside, they got those metal sort of framing. That conducts heat out and cold in, and it is not the best way to go. So let's get rid of those. Let's replace those windows. It'd be the best thing you could do for your house. Just save yourself a lot of money in the long run, and it just looks better, too. Lake Washington Windows and Doors, replacing windows and doors and making your house more energy efficient every single day. Thanks for sponsoring this part of the show. I cannot imagine doing something. I would rather, I believe, go and watch a fourth grade spring concert, knowing not one kid on the stage and not even caring about any of the songs that they're singing, than doing this, Tom.
Yes.
Are you with me?
No.
Why not?
Well, the thing is, first off, maybe I am, because I think a fourth grade spring concert.
No, if you don't know anybody,
charming.
No, they are not.
They are. In fact, I think it's better when you don't know anybody, so you're not dying for your kid. No, look up, Kate. No, Maddie, come on, focus, get that flute higher.
That's to get you in the game. Yeah. It's funny, my kids watched a video that we'd taken when they were little kids.
Yeah.
And Rye said, you know, from the video, it would appear that I was the only child in the entire class. I said, because it's just on him.
Zero.
As soon as some kid would, like, lean in, I'm like, get out of my shot. Get out of there, you big head.
Flying back over to Rye. All right. That's going to that. Or you can go to an escape room.
So the escape room, this is a huge industry.
Right. It's been around for a long time. Why are we talking about it now?
Because Quartz did a deep dive into how successful they are. And one of the things I thought was most surprising or makes most sense in retrospect that I hadn't thought about is this is a great way to take difficult real estate and cash in on it. Because usually these places, they say they're like these odd little shaped areas, you know, between businesses or whatever that they have a hard time renting out. They often have cracked walls or they're kind of falling apart. So if you create this world where you're in like a prison cell or you're in some kind of vampire's lair, all the leaky pipes and everything just sort of adds.
We need you to escape from this commercially difficult place to rent.
Exactly. Okay. And there are almost 2,500 of these in America alone, and on average, they each make $315,000 a year. So that's not a bad profit for that. Yeah. And then they examine, so what is it that people do and why do they do it? And it's now become so traditional. They've been doing it for like 20 years now. It's become so traditional that now 20% of the business is corporate. That like Cairo Radio will send, okay, listen to everybody. This is going to be like a bonding experience. We're going to send No, this is why you hate it. We're gonna send the Chris and Andrew and Tom and John and seven other people, and then they're gonna learn to work together.
Did we get to drop acid before going? I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's right.
The Johns Hopkins hellscape.
They have their own escape room arena. It involves LSD. But the thing is, and here's why they think that it's so appealing. Because I don't know Chris that well personally, but he's so quiet. Mm-hmm. And, we also had Lauren in there. She's so quiet. But they say sometimes in a group setting, people don't, they figure, it only plays to the extroverts. Mm-hmm. Well, in these kinds of things, half the games they have to figure out to get out involve a lot of introversion. You just got to figure out a word puzzle. And so you can go off. It plays to everybody's strengths and weaknesses. And so everybody, even somebody who's the wallflower, can feel like they're part of the
It doesn't play to everyone's strength. Because if your strength is not wanting to be in the room.
That's not a strength, John.
Okay, if your strength
that's a
is,
negative.
No, if you're into all the clues, it's all like, it would be like somebody like Chris would be in there all quiet and nerdy figuring it all out. And I don't want to be in there.
You don't want to be
in there? No, because what am I going to do in there? I don't care about
the
clues.
Because what Chris figures out is, the clue says we need somebody to shimmy up that rope 40 feet. Who has enough arm strength to do it? John.
No,
John, you're really strong. You work out all
ropes?
The time.
Okay, I'm in. They have ropes you can shimmy?
Sure.
The idea is
do you have a mat I can land on at the bottom?
That supposedly explains part of the appeal. And the idea is that it's meant as a bonding experience. I realize I wouldn't want to do this with just random people.
Yeah.
But I think it would be a blast if my four brothers and I all just got together and said, okay, we're in an escape room. The five of us got to figure it out. That would be a lot of fun.
Yes.
I think you've got to be with people that you know and love and can kid around with. But the idea is that it's used now as a way, at least from corporate, to get to know people you don't know very well.
Yeah.
Watch this, Chris, John.
You do not want to go in that room, do you?
No, that corporate and company thing sounds like a nightmare.
That's the point. It's called Nightmare Alley.
Because what would happen is you get the person, you get the nerds, you get the guy and the woman that are really into the clues and stuff. Then they all of a sudden start ordering other people around. Well, the problem is they on the pecking order of sort of alpha male and everything else, they weren't on that order. But now once we get into that room, all of a sudden now you're telling everybody else what to do. I'm sorry, because when we get out of this room, you're going right back to where you were.
Exactly.
No one's going to listen to you.
You win the escape room, that shows you're a loser. Let's go back to the
room. You're not
going to
want to get out of this room, because right now, this is the only time people are listening to you. Hold on a second. I just figured this out. Ugh, God. And finally, in the last remaining 2 minutes, a bizarre story about a man in Japan who became absolutely fascinated with a celebrity. And he was looking at her pictures that she was posting on social media. And he's looking in her eyes, and he is looking just to the left or right of her eye. And what he's looking at is what is in front of her, reflected in the moisture of her eye. And then he was able to take all of those little teeny tiny pictures, the reflections in her eye, little corner space there, and he puts it all together to figure out a train station near her house and a train station that she stops at and then goes to the house.
Yes, and then from there he figures out where she actually lives, and then he assaults her. And it's the kind of obsessive behavior of someone who's clearly obsessed that actually, because of modern technology now, what he did is he took those little images and he blew them up so he could actually get a good handle on it, kind of piece them together like a puzzle, mm-hmm. and then he used a Google Street View to see if he could match this with that, and it's like this elaborate, it's like an escape room.
Yes, he is, I was going to say. You'd want that guy, once he gets out of prison, you're going to want him in the escape room.
Yeah, in fact, he's probably working on getting out of his prison cell right now.
He found the woman, he knew that she would get off the train at a train station, yeah. He might even known what time, he waited for her, and then he followed her home and he assaulted her on her way, either way home or when she got home, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so now he's fessed up. You asked me earlier, I don't have a, he's already pled guilty. We don't have, I don't know what you think a fair sentence would be, but the idea is that now, because of his crime, we're now much more aware of how these kinds of things can be handled. Mm-hmm. And it's a warning for everybody who loves to post everything and anything. Unbelievable how much information is in just an innocent shot of you at the beach or, you know, in a hiking in the mountains or something. They could find things out about you that you just assume not
to
know.
But not the background. That's the interesting thing. He doesn't go off the background. He goes off the eyeball, the reflection in the eye. Still write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. We do love to hear from you. The text line. And teeny tiny lady is going to get a chance to sit right over the shoulder of Chris Martin and choose that letter of the day. We do have some word that it may be a letter telling me that I should hop on a plane and go see my mom. I have my phone on, and Tom has been seeing me checking it the whole show. It's, I lost my dad while doing an auction in Sonoma.
Yeah.
And I said to my brother, I can't be there. He said, don't bother. Your dad's not going to last another couple hours. I said, well, I want you to tell me everything that's happening in the room. So I would stand on stage and sell an item, and I'd run back to this little table and check my phone in between selling items. And he was giving me an awful play-by-play of the final stages of life, or at least death taking over for life against my dad.
I also think we ought to make public the fact that you did write something and had your brother read.
I did. I sent it to him on Friday afternoon through much tears, and I said, could you do me a favor? Can you just read this into your mom's ear?
Yeah.
And he said, yes, I'll do that. And then 20 minutes later, he wrote back, that's a nice memory.
Yeah. So it's nice that, I mean, you haven't sort of abandoned your mother by not going there, but still, it does weigh on you and the rest of the show, I've got to be honest.
Thanks, Tom. All right, quick break, come back. Thanks for the letters, everybody. MyNorthwest.com and texting as well at 9897. All right, we say goodbye to Van Halen on this Mullet Monday. You like this, though, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I like all the big hits.
Right.
I never was into Van Halen enough that I'd buy an album.
We find out from Chris and yourself the reason you weren't into this music is you didn't like the people that were into this music.
Exactly.
We get into your cliques when you're in high school. You know?
Right. You know, you don't want to be associated with those guys that are drawing over their copy books. Here comes the mailman. Remember that? They'd be drawing Led Zeppelin all over their books and like the ZZZ stuff.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me.
Uh-huh.
I'm the mailman.
Hello!
Not yet!
I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Jeez. Teeny Tiny?
No.
She's way off, Tom.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's taking the key run to control.
Okay, here we go. Start off from Sean in Arlington. Mm-hmm. John Curley.
Yes.
You've been through a hell of a lot in the time I've been a listener. I just wanted to let you know I look up to you as an example of the manner in which someone comports themselves in the wake of the family losses you've shared. I'm about the same age as you and have been on the edge of my seat on these types of losses since my parents are now approaching that time when they may suddenly no longer be in my life. I only hope that I can even begin to maintain the composure and healthy perspective that you demonstrated on your personal, if even somewhat, public journey in these matters. Thank you for sharing those personal life events with us all.
Thank you, Sean. Oof. I am intentionally not reading the letter I wrote her, not reading the funny stuff that my brother read. I'm trying to just get through this one today. So here we go. 360 says, just let the father decide on the punishment regarding the Texas
shooting.
Yeah, I don't know about
that. Could be tough. 425. I find it ironic that Tom is defending this poor woman's right to own that gun in the house. According to Tom and his cohorts, I have cohorts. Aren't we gun owners the problem? So Tom defends a gun owner if it's a black person, but not if it's a white Trump supporter? No.
480, once again, John Curley, you're deflecting from the fact that this police officer shot a woman playing video games with her nephew in her own home. Don't try to deviate from the facts of the story. I'm not, by bringing in what a pastor might say. All right. The community should be outraged. The term they is appropriate. If one cop is attacked or killed, it's an attack on all police officers. Okay. You can't pick and choose when they can be used. Sure you can. Police entity need to be better, train their officers to avoid these types of incidents. Love the show. I agree.
On the psilocybin treatment, mm-hmm. One thing they didn't talk about is that LSD is stored in fat cells. What they have found is people who are obese and took LSD, when they lose weight and get to the level of fat storage when they took the LSD, they have a reoccurring trip again.
Wow. This news, these letters brought to you by Care Partner Senior Living, where you, mom and dad might need a change of pace and don't lose too much weight. Care Partner Senior Living. All right, how about Stu in Burbank says, yeah, I used to drink 20 cocktails a day, and then I started listening to the Tom and Curley Show. I now drink 40 cocktails a day. Stu, welcome.
On Columbus versus Indigenous Day, 425 says, Indigenous Day. Yeah. Curley, that was a low and ignorant blow about which murderer do we celebrate.
Yes.
Some, if not most, take on a parent's point of view and stick with it, no matter how wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, moving forward, their children are strong enough in character to form their own opinions. Native Americans were here long before your ancestors were on this land. Often you're sharp, well-articulated, and I can actually learn from you. But every now and then, you tend to really disappoint.
Oh, sorry about that, 425. Yep. They had slaves, and they killed and tortured one another, just like Columbus was accused of. Syria, 425. Trump has major holdings in Turkey. Really? He's only thinking of himself.
No, that is true. He has the major Twin Towers. But 916. Trump pulled out to force Congress to declare war or not. We either go in and finish it, or we don't.
There, that's what's going on. All right, meth at 253. By the way, all recovering meth addicts that I have met say they started using and abusing Adderall.
So I guess the return of that wouldn't help then? Is that the idea? But And 206, Ritalin is easily crushed and snorted, which is what most addicts would do with it. Ritalin is simply pharmaceutical-grade clean meth. It's an upgrade from meth.
It's cleaner, right. Yeah. Your teeth don't fall out. I've been doing meth for 20 years, and I have a bedroom, two-bedroom apartment, a brand-new car. I make $5,000 a month. I haven't stopped because of the risk of the heart failure. It doesn't get me high anymore. It literally keeps me level. If I could switch to a prescription to quit, I would do that. By the way, I have all my teeth, and I'm over 50 pounds over, and meth doesn't affect everyone the same way. Well, unfortunately, this portion of the show brought to you by meth.
Letter of the day comes from 425. Mr. Curley, you should go to your mom. My father was in Ohio and had lung cancer. He deteriorated really quickly within a week. He didn't have his wits about him and went into hospice and passed away quickly. I would have had time to go say goodbye, but I was really pregnant and decided not to go. I've regretted that decision every day, and it's been 13 years. I'm a believer in Christ, so I know one day I'll see my dad again, but I wish I would have said goodbye. That closure would have meant the world to me, even if he didn't know I was there.
Mm.
I'm not trying to guilt you, just sharing my story. But if you don't go, make sure you spell check your notes. She will hear you. Love you. Love the show. I listen every day. Katie in Snohomish.
All the time. Bye-bye.